Hi, I'm T2, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon because they're super gentle to my wires and boards. I think you should, too. Go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up podcast listeners, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up podcast. I'm John. Joining me, as always, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
In this episode, we will run down our top 10 favorite one-hit wonders from the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
Memorable tracks from artists that were never quite able to duplicate the success of that one great song. But you know what is always at the top of the charts for us?
What is?
What?
Our fourth listeners.
man, you have been working hard on these segues lately. Is that a new thing for you?
I'm trying. I'm doing my best. we do have some fourth listener email from someone who's not a one-hit wonder. Chad has written in again.
Wow.
Subject line of this email is, "That's incredible," referencing the backtrack show.
Yeah.
So Chad writes to say, "I loved this show when I was a kid, though I don't have any vivid memories of any of the segments as I don't think I've seen the show since it was on, but when you guys started talking about them, I definitely remembered them." Again, we're doing
our job.
Apparently, yeah. So that's right. He says the only one he does remember was a man who blew bubbles, soap bubbles, not like blowing bubblegum bubbles, and he was smoking and he was blowing smoke into the bubbles to make designs.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Do you remember? I don't remember that one, but
I wonder how that plays on television today with no cigarette ads and everything.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Here's some designs in cancer. Answer for you, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy.
You can vape into it, I suppose. Can you vape?
Yeah, like that's any better.
It's not the same.
I guess no. He goes on to say, "I guess the guy who ate the bike saw Klinger try to eat the Jeep on MASH." I remember that.
Oh, I remember that episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he thought that was dumb, but hey, a bike could work. Yeah, a Jeep, no, but definitely you can eat a bike. What's wrong with that? Forever fourth listener, Chad. Awesome. Thank you, Chad.
Hey, Chad.
We'd love it every time the fourth listener writes on. If you'd like your email read here on the show, just like Chad, hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most make the show. All right, if you guys are ready, it's time to jump into these one-hit wonders from the 1970s. You good to go, Mo?
Let's do it.
George, ready?
Absolutely.
Off we go.
Hello, friends. I founded the 70s Preservation Society to keep the forgotten music of the 1970s alive forever. And on our new song collection, Those Fabulous 70s, you can enjoy 23 of the decade's greatest hits by the original superstars. Who could forget the beloved Partridge Family? Supergroup, the Bay City Rollers. Funk legend, Wild Cherry. And the bittersweet storytelling of Bo Donaldson and the Haywoods. Yes, you get 23 top 10 hits. That's over 75 minutes of magical 70s music. Available on double-length cassette, just $14.99. CD, just $18.99. Sorry, not available on 8-track.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!
Now, you'll remember, it had to be sometime last year, 2 years ago, we did our one-hit wonders list from the 1980s, and that's a wildly successful episode. That still gets lots of listens.
And controversy.
Because it's got the best decade for music, that's why.
You're right. There's no question it's the best decade for music. We wanted to do something a little bit different. We wanted to look at the 70s. Now, the 70s, kind of weird for Gen Xers, that was the bleeding edge of music for us. We listened to the 80s growing up and all through high school.
Early days.
And we're all a little bit older than each other. So George is the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You were born in 71, I think.
71. Yep.
I was born in 69.
Yeah.
And Mo was born in 1437.
That's close. Yeah.
Sorry, 67, 1967. But yeah. Right, we're all just 2 years apart. But George is the youngest of us by far. We started looking at these, and you looked at this list, George. What was your reaction?
I didn't know crap that was on this list. No, I didn't have a frame of reference. No, I mean, I knew one or two of the songs, but not from the 70s, because when I was a young child at that age, you know, 71 through 1980, so never more than 9 years old, my parents only listened to country music.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I think most of us at that point,
that explains a lot.
We didn't get to choose music.
Sure.
Like nowadays, 5-year-old kid has his own damn phone and he's got, you know, whatever streaming service for music he wants, and he listens to whatever he wants. But back then, when you were in the car with the radio, whatever your father or mother put that dial on, that was what you listened to.
It was like
I listen to country.
Yeah, you watched what was on and you listened to what was on. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yep.
So the one hit wonders we're looking at in this episode are from the 1970s. So again, let's revisit this harsh definition from Wikipedia. A one hit wonder is any entity, in this case songs, that achieve mainstream popularity often for only one piece of work and becomes known among the general public solely for that momentary success.
Ooh, that sounds
harsh. I know. That's we hated harsh,
right?
Momentary success.
You were good for like a little while, then you
for
sucked.
A second. That's right.
Yes, you had your time in the sky, then that's it.
You're all done.
You're done.
So we're using that definition. And in fact, Wikipedia had a list of 71 songs that their criteria, which involve hitting the charts, staying on the charts a certain period, and never hitting the charts again. And so we had those to pull from. So since George didn't have as much familiarity in this version of One Hit Wonders, we picked a group top 10.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, we've done that before on a couple of different things. And so we create a spreadsheet.
It works well.
And then we allow ourselves a certain amount of points to put on anything that we want. So we have like 60 points total and we can spread them around, kind of like the bean counting episode from The Office where they're trying to decide who gets what raises.
Yes, right. Same idea. And moving beans the last second to try to snipe each other. All
exactly.
That happened. That's right. We had all those
things.
All that
type of stuff happened. And so we came up with a comprehensive list. So it's not that it's an individual's top 10. It's not Mo's top 10 or John's or mine.
It is ours.
It's ours. It's kind of a combined thing. And we feel like that's a fair democratic way to do it, especially when one of us, myself, has little to no experience with the songs from that time period.
Yep. Yeah. And lastly, before we get started, I will say that when we get to the end, we've all individually picked our own personal honorable mention that was not reliant on everybody else. So we have our top 10 and we also have three more honorable mentions. We'll get to those at the end. But I think we've laid the groundwork. We know what we're doing. George, why don't you get us started with our number 10 pick for the one-hit wonder from the 1970s?
I would be happy to. Our number 10 pick is Right Place, Wrong Time by Dr. John.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I'd have said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line.
And he released that song in 1972. Now, it didn't get popular until the summer of 1973, where it peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Mm.
So it's got a little bit of a gestation before it got really popular. And I think that was kind of the way a lot of songs did then. It didn't have social media to instantly make something successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's ranked as the 24th biggest hit of 1973.
Mm.
It's been included in an episode of American Horror Story. It's been on an episode of That 70s Show. It's been in, John, one of your favorite, Fargo. It was in
one
of those.
It was, absolutely.
Yep.
Music included there.
And then, of course, it was in some movies. It was in Fun with Dick and Jane, believe it or not.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. It was in Sahara. That was the Matthew McConaughey, we're going on a treasure hunt thing.
Yeah.
I went to see that movie. I thought, anyway.
At least one person who wrote a
McConaughey
Wikipedia article
saw it,
did.
I guess.
Okay.
I'm not sure he did. He might have just been in it. He might not have gone and watched it.
That's probably, it's fair.
But then the final film, and this is probably a film that we could use for this entire list. It was in the movie Dazed and Confused from 1993. And that's where I know
fits.
It the most from.
That fits.
I love that film. And there is such a rich history of music associated with that film. And this is definitely one of my favorite songs from this film.
John, you actually scored this one pretty high. I mean, why was that?
I did. Well, this is one of those songs that while while it wasn't one of my favorite songs, it just screams the 70s to me. Like the gravelly voice of the lead singer of Dr. John, in the middle of the right place in the wrong time. I mean, just that kind of thing, it just feels like I'm in a Cheech and Chong movie, kind of a lowrider a little bit. It just feels like that. This ought to be back to back with the song Lowrider, Craig Franklin. You know,
sure.
Just
yeah.
How it sounds to me.
That'd be a playlist. I could see
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah, I can see that.
It's nothing in the song spoke to me, but man, it just feels 70s. And every time it's on, you kind of turn it on because of the vocals in it. That's why I kind of weighted it.
Okay.
So right place, wrong time, our number 10 pick. Why don't we move along to our number 9? Mo, what'd we pick?
Oh, this was an easy one for me. Number 9 was I Love the Nightlife by Alicia Bridges.
Mm.
So I have 3 older brothers.
Okay.
Right. So they were heavy into disco music.
This is a disco classic for sure.
Oh yeah. And by osmosis, I was too, because they owned the record player.
So you're required to. It was yeah. Like George's parents. It's like that's what
right.
They're listening
exactly.
To.
Exactly.
That's what you're gonna hear. So your older brothers forced you to hear this.
Yes. Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, Mo, you're not big enough to beat us up yet, so we're picking the music.
Essentially that's what it comes down to. But this particular song, it charted number 5 in the US in 1978 and hit like number 32 in Europe. Doing some digging on this, I found out that originally this song was supposed to be an R&B song.
Huh.
Because she threw the word disco in there.
Oh, in the song?
Yeah. I guess they said that we have to make this a disco, they disco-fied it.
No, before the show, George, you said there's a new rule. There's a word in this song that mandates it be absolutely a disco. What was that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have the word boogie anywhere in your song, it's a disco song.
It's a disco song.
Instantly.
Instantly, it's
be.
A disco song. I don't care what type of instruments you have behind
you.
It. If you have the word boogie, instant disco song. That's it.
You know, I'd be actually interested to hear this as an R&B, but I don't think I'd be able to. I think I'd always hear the disco side of this.
Forever.
You could take this thing and go a cappella group from MIT, and it's still a disco song.
Disco song.
You have the word boogie in it.
That mandates it.
The funny thing is that Alicia Bridges, who of course made this song a hit, turned out that she did not like disco at all. And to the point
bad.
Where she's actually quoted as saying that she would rather do a deodorant commercial than do another disco song.
And yet, oh. The one thing she's known for that if she performs
this.
Anywhere and she's going to have to sing is a disco song.
I know. It must be like her own version of hell, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
She lives her life. She's like, no, not I Love the Nightlife again.
Yeah.
Free bird! It's her free bird.
I say one thing. I mean, regardless of what she thought of it, is definitely a disco classic. I mean,
it is.
Totally
it, yeah,
is.
Unavoidably.
Yep. Oh, man. Okay, so that's number 9. So what do we got for number 8, John?
Yeah, number 8 is from a band that I have some tenuous ties to because it's related to the Alan Parsons Project. I'll explain
oh,
why in a minute.
Oh, I wondered how this one got on the list.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it did.
He gave all his points to this one.
I voted
why.
Heavy into it. This is Pilot with Magic, 1974.
Don't want to know, but I've got to ask. What the hell's the connection?
You got
to
ask,
man.
You got to ask.
Damn Alan Parsons Project
yeah.
Song.
Well, Magic is a great song in general, but the reason I picked it beyond just that I enjoy this song is by Pilot. Not only was the song produced by Alan Parsons, who produced tons of other stuff like Dark Side of the Moon and stuff for the Beatles and Abbey Road and things like that, but Pilot at the time of this release featured David Paton and Ian Berenson, who play bass and guitar in many of the Alan Parsons things. So that's why the connection, but on its own merits, it was the first single the Pilot released and it reached number 5 in the summer of 1975, but it ended up being their only top 40 hit ever in the United States. And isn't that a bummer? Like your first thing out of the gate is amazing,
yeah.
And then crickets.
So he Shyamalan'd it.
that's kind of the point of a lot of the one-hit wonders, right? They do one thing, it
yeah.
Goes really big. And, you know, to say it was their first thing, they probably had made other songs and
good
been
point.
Touring around before that. So,
yeah. It was the first big single that released.
You
yeah.
Know, there's a process, and it was their first big one that hit
fair
for
enough.
Them, and then just nothing else did afterwards.
Yeah, and that's a shame. You know, when you hear the song, and it sounds very much like a love song, and it kind of is and kind of isn't. Actually, there's only 2 verses and the rest is just the chorus and they don't mention a girl at all. Apparently they say that the song is actually about waking up on a sunny day. According to David Paton, who wrote it, it was inspired by the sunrise on Blackbird Hill in Edinburgh.
Now it inspires commercials everywhere.
doesn't it? It's magic. Absolutely. Yep. How many times have we seen that?
I know. I feel like it's a part of every car commercial now. And
yeah. Every cleaning product.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's magic. Cleans up spills like magic.
It's magic.
It'll be on the next Ron Popeil infomercial.
Imagine owning the world's greatest love songs. Can you want a by the greatest voices of our time. Tell me how am I supposed to live without you? In a once-in-a-lifetime collection. Time Life Music presents the Ultimate Love Songs Collection.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
We got through the first few. This is going to get us to the middle of the pack. We're up to number 7. And Mo, what is our pick for the number 7 one-hit wonder of the 70s?
Number 7's a great, great song is Oh Child by the Five Stair Steps from 1970.
Ooh, child, things are going to get easier. Things get brighter.
Yeah, this song, I mean, everyone probably knows the song now because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hell yeah,
it's a song he uses to distract him at the end.
So many great songs in Guardians.
This song saved the universe. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Break it down hard.
You can't get better than that. Take it away. It reached number 8 in the U.S., which actually surprises me. I thought this would be a number 1, to be honest.
Yeah.
But actually, when they re-released it as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, it actually hit like number 1 for soundtracks.
Oh, that makes sense. The whole soundtrack did?
Yeah, the whole soundtrack did.
Oh, so it got credit for that. Well, good for them. They were a one-hit wonder 2 times.
Oh, you're not kidding. I was reading about this song in Guardians of the Galaxy. They said that, you know, whenever they were shooting a scene that they had like one of these songs was going to play in the background, mm-hmm. James Gunn would play the song like on a loop over and over and over. And they said of all the ones, that Chris Pratt said that this is the only one he didn't mind hearing over and over and over again. All the rest of them he got totally sick of.
I can see that. I'm just listening to it now and I'm almost kind of sick of it myself.
I mean, it is the one they let him sing in the movie, so I get why he didn't mind hearing that one over and over again.
You know,
because he knew it was going to be his big final moment of the movie.
A classic song, but it kind of like, ooh, it sounds so wimpy. I've never loved it.
It's a, like a nice, upbeat kind of song. I know, like, John, you didn't rate this really high as far as far as I did anyway. I mean, I just think it's just a nice song.
Still deserving. Yeah. Yeah, just for its legacy. I agree.
All right, John, so what do you got for number 6?
Yeah, we're up to number 6. This one I definitely loaded some points on. I like this one. The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. Vicki Lawrence, 1973.
That's a night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's a night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul to no backwoods southern lawyer. Cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his.
So Vicki Lawrence, this is a one-hit wonder for her, but she's not a one-hit wonder in the world of entertainment.
No.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. Well, she was on the Carol Burnett Show for years. She's a comic a comedian. Yeah.
She was on Mama's House, or what was that? Is that
sitcom? Yeah, Mama's Family or something
Mama's
like
family.
That.
Mama's Family, that was
right.
Let me tell you, when this came on our list, I saw Vicki Lawrence. I was like, that can't be the same.
Is that the same Vicki Lawrence?
I mean, it is. I looked up, I'm like, it is. Oh, my God. It's such a great song, too.
I think she's probably one of the most underrated comedians of all time. People want to talk about about Joan Rivers or even Roseanne Barr, modern audiences. Vicki Lawrence was a genius. Carol Burnett really benefited by having her on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can see how multi-talented she was by having this huge hit on Billboard.
I know. Yeah, no kidding. And the thing I love about the song is we've talked about this in other things, in video games and other, you know, other media. It tells an amazing story. And it's like this crime story with a twist at the end.
Yo,
it's
like
M. Night Shyamalan wrote it for her.
And then went off in obscurity.
But somebody better.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So this thing was released, I said, in 1973. It hit number one on the U.S. Billboard charts. And of course, I mean, she really didn't do that much more. And if you never had any exposure to the song before this podcast, you might remember in Reservoir Dogs, Chris Penn's character was saying something about, I'm listening to it this morning. This is the first time I realized that the girl singing the song is the one who shot Andy. That's right. But just a great song with it, that's a ballad and it tells a story. And that's why I love that it made our hit at number six.
Does she have a big singing career?
No.
Nope. Vicki Lawrence?
Nope.
I mean, does she try? I mean,
this is it. This is the big singing career that she had.
Well, if you can do it right, right?
Do it
then
right.
She put on a wig and some garter hose and she became mama. And that was the end.
And that was her TV hit wonder.
Yeah.
All right, George, let's move along to number five. What do we got?
Number five is probably one of the most influential songs of all time. And I'm not saying that facetiously. I mean that genuinely. Mm-hmm. We have Rapper's Delight by the Sugar Hill Gang from 1979.
Yeah.
Come on, Hank, sing that song. Check it out. I'm the C-A-S-N, the O-V-A, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix. And these reasons, I'll tell you why. I'm 6'1" and I'm tons of fun, and I guess to a T. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. Wasn't this on our 80s one-hit wonder list also?
Yeah, it was. Kind of. But there's a reason why it's on both. I'm going to explain why I think it deserves a spot on both lists legitimately.
Okay.
The song was released in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
It became a hit, reaching number 36 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1980. Okay. So it was kind of a bridging of the years. But you got to realize what this song is credited with. This song is credited with introducing hip-hop to the masses of the American audience.
So good.
It's not the first rap song, but it is the first one to become a major hit.
Well, like a mainstream rap song that just said, you know, rap is not just kind of this flash-in-the-pan kind of thing that's a gimmick. It's not novelty music. And it really put it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been recognized by a lot of different sources. Rapper's Delight is number 251 on the Rolling Stones magazine list of the 500 greatest songs of all time.
Wow.
Not just for a decade,
yep.
Not just for a century, of all time. It's also number two on VH1's 100 greatest hip-hop songs. And then even NPR, believe it or not, lists this as one of the 100 most important American musical works of the 20th century.
The most uptight anti-rap media thing of the world.
Yeah, NPR still didn't ruin the song. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
No, and it's even been enshrined into that archive thing by the Library of Congress as one of the most important works of man kind of thing, so it's always going to be there for someone. I mean, that's how influential this song was. It was three guys, a producer, they sampled a song from Chic, believe it or not, as part of the bass line. Oh, just one of my favorites of all time, because, John, you were big into hip-hop when we were growing up. I know I enjoyed a lot of hip-hop.
Still am, absolutely.
You don't have any of that without Rapper's Delight and the Sugar Hill Gang, and they never had another hit.
Nope.
That's just a damn shame, but that's the way it goes. The only thing that surprises me is it didn't make it higher up in our top 10. I really think this is deserving of a top spot because of its influence in general. Now, it didn't make it there because we all kind of voted mid-range on this because we had other songs we were trying to put votes on, but I think this deserves to be in the top three from the 70s, only because of its influence.
Well, as a consolation prize, it made both of our lists, the 70s and the 80s, so it's got that going for it.
True. Yeah.
And deserved it.
While it's still close, still sick from the food you ate, and then you run to the store for quick relief from a bottle of K.O. Pectate.
Mystic Music presents 70s Feelings.
Well, that's the way I've always heard it should be.
40 of the most loving hits of the 70s. You'll recapture the feelings. Just listen.
Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Let 70s feelings awaken the dreams, the romance, the feelings that you remember.
To order 70s feelings, call 1-800-349-3232 or send $19.95 for two cassettes or $29.95 for two CDs plus $4.95 shipping to 70s feelings, PO Box 1164-P, Monument, Colorado.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.
We are truly past the halfway point now. We're moving into the top five of our top 10 one-hit wonders of the 1970s. And George, let's throw it back to you. What is your number four pick?
I don't know how this song ended up at number four. It should have been number one on every damn list we ever had, but it is Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles from 1979.
I think it's kind of where it belongs, to be honest. I did not rate this high.
You didn't give it a damn point.
That's not very high.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Here's my reason for this. I never heard of this song until it was on MTV.
Okay.
So? But you've heard it now.
Which is 1980.
Oh, so it's an 80s song for you.
So Rapper's Delight can cross the divide, but this can't just because listen to the radio early enough? No, that's not its fault.
I listened to a lot of radio. This was not what was playing in New York at the time.
Oh. So. Oh, in New York.
Oh, ooh. New York. Whoa.
Hey.
Do you have any great poupon?
Exactly. I mean, come on. When they played this on MTV the first time, I was like, what song is this? And I was like, nobody I knew even heard of it.
Well, let me give you some of the details about this to try and convince you a little bit more, because it does have a really unique storied history.
Okay.
Believe it or not, it was first recorded by a guy named Bruce Woolley in the Camera Club. And they had Thomas Dolby on the keyboards for the original recording.
Okay.
Later on, it got re-recorded by the trio who wrote the song, which Bruce Woolley was a part of, as the band called The Buggles.
That's the one we know, right?
And that's the one that we know that ended up on MTV. It reached number 40 in the U.S. Oddly enough, it ranked number 40 on VH1's 100 Greatest One-Hit Wonders of the 80s.
Okay.
Again, from 79. Right.
Yeah. This is the one that everybody knows. First music video ever shown on MTV in the U.S. at 12:01 on August 1st, 1981.
On launch day.
Oddly enough, later on down the line, it was also the first video shown on MTV Classic in the UK on March 1st, 2010. That's the life that this song has.
So when they made an extra channel for music again, they used it one more time.
Right.
Yeah, but that was obviously a gimmick. I mean, come on.
But like, it was a great gimmick. There was a reason for it. And it was in one of my favorite musical films of all times, or soundtracks of musical films, Empire Records. I don't know how it gets 0 points. I understand low points maybe because you want to save them for some of the other schlock that we're going to put later on.
Wow.
Jeez.
Loaded language.
I know.
But 0 points, Mo? Really?
In the 70s, I've never heard of the song, so I didn't think it deserved a single point.
Wow.
Ouch. I'm sorry. I never heard of it. I did not hear the song until 81.
Well, let's let you tell everybody what our number three song is and see if you can redeem yourself.
Oh, absolutely, because nobody's going to argue with me on this one. I guarantee
you
this one.
Here we go.
Okay, so number three on our list is Kung Fu Fighting. Come on. But ooh. Carl Douglas, 1974.
Everybody was Kung Fu.
This song was produced by somebody called Bidu, which I'm not sure.
Of course it was.
This was the first UK number one hit that was produced by an Asian person. So there you go. So that's something there.
And is that because it's about kung fu fighting? No, it couldn't be.
No.
Okay.
But basically, it just capitalized on the movie craze. Kung fu movies are huge in early 70s.
Which was awesome.
Bruce Lee was massive.
Yeah. Yes.
And of course, every martial arts movie that was slightly not serious at all used this song. Kung Fu Panda, Wayne World 2, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Beverly Hills Ninja.
Like I said, who are not serious at all. They all use the song. But come on, this is an earworm catchy song.
Now, I had actually heard that this song almost wasn't a song at all, let alone a one-hit wonder. And in fact, I brought our friend Moxie from Your Brain on Facts podcast over to join us. Hey, Moxie, how you doing?
Hey, guys. I could not be more happy to come over here and talk about this song.
So you were telling us earlier that Kung Fu Fighting, as great as it is and what such an earworm it is, it almost didn't happen. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, well, it's performed by Carl Douglas, who is, he was a session musician, basically the guy you get in to do a song that was written by a songwriter as opposed to an artist, and a producer by the name of, I think it's pronounced Bidu, I've never heard it said. He had hired Douglas to sing the song, I Want to Give You My Everything, as a single.
Okay.
But a single, and for the young people in the audience, that was when you bought one song on a physical media, and on the back of it was some other song you didn't care about and would probably never listen to a second time.
The B-side.
You had to go to a store and interact with other human beings. They were dark times. And there were two music stores in the mall, but they were owned by the same company, but they didn't tell you that.
You started when there was a mall? Wow. Most started when it was a cart on the back of a horse.
Hey, I'm not that old.
Not that old.
Just because my records were stone doesn't mean anything.
But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the B-side of I Want to Give You My Everything, which ended up being Kung Fu Fighting. See, they didn't have a second song. They had 3 hours of studio time blocked out, and you might as well use it because you paid for it and you're not getting the remainder back, mm-hmm. You don't get a prorated refund on the studio time. So they're like, let's see what we can do. So Bidu tossed it over to Carl Douglas. Like, do you have anything, like maybe something from the vault that you can dredge up? And they ended up writing it really quick. But they got it in 2 takes.
Wow.
In 10 minutes.
In the last 10 minutes of the studio time. Let's just knock this out.
Wow.
The last 10 minutes, like, let's just get something on the B-side. I don't know. Maybe you can't even put singles out without a B-side. I don't know. But 2 takes, the man got it. For a song that had never been performed before is pretty amazing. And he did all the chop-socky yells and stuff like that.
Right.
Exactly. And it was a throwaway. It was just meant to be filler. And then Bidu played it for the head of Pi Records, who noticed really quickly, this is a good song. This is, in fact, the better song. This should be the A-side. This should be the single that we release.
Really?
And it didn't initially do very well, the single or the song, for the first month or so. And then they started playing it in dance clubs. And if there's one thing Britain likes... Yeah. If there's one thing England likes, it's dance music.
Yes.
So after it started getting play in the clubs, it just jumped up the charts in the UK. It only made it into the low 40s on the Billboard chart. But hey, for a song that was just filler, that's not bad.
10 minutes?
Yeah. And it went on to sell, 11 million copies of this thing they did. Yeah. In 10 minutes in 2 takes that wasn't meant to be anything. And if I could share a personal anecdote.
Please
do.
This song actually has a personal significance for me. It fell to me to be the one to take our childhood dog to the vet to be euthanized. Like the dog we all grew up with. So, and it fell to me.
You were older, not as a child.
No, not as a child. I had to be able to drive.
Because that would have been terrifying. I was like, good Lord.
Here, little girl, take the dog to the vet. No.
Well, if nothing else, you'd hope they'd wait until I was old enough to have a driver's license, make the poor dog walk there. That's terrible.
Would you walk the sick dog up to the vet?
Just carry him.
The baton death march of golden retrievers. So I'm coming out of the vet. I get in my car. I turn on the radio, and Let It Be is playing. And that's, so soothing. I'm like, this is nice. And it's just wrapping up. And we had this radio station at the time that claimed to play everything. And then the next song up was Kung Fu Fighting.
So after Let It Be?
Yeah, from Let It Be straight into Kung Fu Fighting. And that's when I learned it is physically impossible to cry while this song is playing. It's just, you can't. You cannot do it. It cannot be done.
Such a feel-good song, and it made you feel better. That's great.
Yeah, because it's so fun, and it's so happy, and it's fundamentally so silly.
Yeah.
You know, that... Yeah, I was still kind of bummed out, but it's physically impossible to cry while Kung Fu Fighting is playing on the radio.
That's a little known fact. You heard it here first.
Oh, I've got all the bonus facts for you.
Thanks for stopping by, Moxie. Man, we love your show. Would you tell our fourth listeners how they can find your podcast?
Yeah, well, if you want to get more bonus facts like these, you can, well, of course, once you have finished the entire back catalog of Gen X Grown Up, use that same podcast app to look up Your Brain on Facts or go to yourbrainonfacts.com. Or if you want to fill your brain in a quieter sort of way, there's also the Your Brain on Facts book available now.
Ooh, excellent. Moxie, thanks for stopping by.
No, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Now we're getting down to the bottom of the list here, the big one. So what do we got for number two,
John? This is the top of the list. This is the best.
The top of the list.
Yeah,
the best.
Not according to me. Just saying.
Okay, John, what do we got for number two?
Number two is, I love this song and I love the story behind it, but I'll get to that in a second. This is My Sharona by The Knack from 1979. Yeah, who doesn't love My Sharona? I mean, it had a great Weird Al cover, My Bologna.
Yeah, I'll
That's
give you
awesome.
That. That's why I know this song at all, because of the Weird Al cover. But the song itself, you're right, it's awesome. And the backstory, I've watched a little bit of it as well. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, My Sharona was the best-selling single in the entire U.S. in all of 1979. Not just during their hit, but it was their debut single, hit number one. Again, somebody, their first big single out of the gate. It stayed in the top 100 for 6 weeks, and they never made it back.
Wow.
Mm. Poor The Knack.
I know. So what's this backstory? I didn't hear this one.
I love this story. And if this doesn't bring a little tear to your eye, you've made a stone.
Aww.
So the song is about a woman named Sharona Alperin.
Okay.
So the lead singer for The Knack, Doug Feger, had a crush on her. Doug was 25 and Sharona was only 17.
Okay, a little creepy, but go ahead.
They met in a clothing store where Sharona worked. Doug was there with his girlfriend.
Ooh.
Saw Sharona, was smitten by her. With his girlfriend looking on, invited her to come to the show that night.
Wow.
It wasn't long before they were together. They even got engaged, but they never actually got married and they drifted apart. I love to quote that Sharona said of the breakup, she needed to become her own Sharona, not someone else's. So she kind of needed to escape that claustrophobic identity she had with the lead singer of this band.
So is that inspired the song? Or was that
after
the
song? Wrote the song to woo her.
It was all about her. Yeah.
Got it.
He wrote the song and she inspired 2 years of great songwriting by Doug throughout the time he was with The Knack. And then they broke up. Now, later they reconciled and they became friends in the early 2000s again.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually together during Doug's last week of life in February of 2010. They'd made amends.
Aww.
They were together as friends again at the setting of his life, which I think is an amazing capper.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that you might expect to see on a after-school Lifetime special kind of film, but it happened for real.
You know what I mean? This is like a Hallmark movie. You know, they're estranged, but they're great friends. And when he's dying, she's there. And it's like, wow. And on top of it, a great song.
And it's a great song.
Presenting Sounds of the 70s. All your favorite 70s hits in one fantastic collection. Get Sounds of the 70s for just $9.99 on compact disc or double length cassette. That's 22 fabulous hits. Sounds of the 70s is not sold in stores. So call now.
To order Sounds of the 70s, call 1-800-527-2400. Or send just $9.99 for one cassette or one compact disc. Plus $3.50 shipping and handling to Sounds of the 70s. Department 8, Richmond, Virginia.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform, and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
It's almost time for our number one one-hit wonder of the 1970s. Before we do that, I wanted to give each one of us an opportunity to pick one song that the other two just didn't care about at all, but to have an honorable mention and put it here on the show.
Yeah, because that didn't happen that often on this list.
It happened a lot.
Yeah, was it twice?
Let's start with you, Mo. What was your honorable mention?
All right, this one, I was surprised that this made no one's list, really, but that's okay. I get it. It's a lot of great songs to choose from. You can't pick them all, right?
True.
So, but this song is Me and Mrs. Jones by Billy Paul in 1972.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
This song hit number one, and this is the part I just thought was so funny. It's like, you know, it's a song about having an affair. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's
oh yeah.
Okay.
It's
learning.
A song about a person having an affair with Mrs. Jones. It knocked out Helen Reddy's "I Am Woman" out of number one when it became a hit, and it was knocked out by Carly Simon's "You're So Vain." So it's kind of weird little sandwiching.
What kind of sandwich between
it.
Some stuff?
Huh. Also, I mean, this was in SS Magazine's top 25 slow jams of all time, and it really deserves it. It is an
and
amazing
so it's
song.
Your honorable mention. Why do you specifically? Why do you love and pick this one?
I just remember when this came on. It was like one of those times, like we'd be driving in the car, going on some trip or something like that. Song would come on, and this is when my dad would be like, "Shut up back there!" And turn up the radio. He loved this song for a good reason. Any of the adults in the car were always like, some of the kids like, "Shh,
yep, we gotta hear this
song's coming on." The radio would turn up, and then the song was over, and we could be loud again.
I love memories like that connected to songs and why it's meaningful to you. So, George, how about you? What was your honorable mention that didn't make the top 10?
So first of all, it's the most honorable mention, the most honorable mention of all of them.
Oh,
because
okay.
It's mine, jeez. And I'm always right. So,
regardless of what our fourth listeners
all right.
think.
Fair enough.
Mine is Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry from 1976.
Song.
This awesome honorable mention, which should have been on the list anyway, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in September 18th, 1976. It was also number one on the Hot Soul Singles chart. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this may be one of the few songs on our list that hit number one on two different charts
multiple
of the era.
Multiple charts, yeah.
Right? Certified platinum by our good friends at the RIAA because they sold over 2 million records, eventually making it to 2.5 million records just in the U.S.
Mm,
wow. Right? That was back in the days when record sales are how they counted things, right?
When it was records,
right?
When it was 45.
Yeah.
And albums and everything.
Yep.
It was listed at number 93 on Billboard Magazine's all-time top 100 songs in 2018.
Wow.
So people still, even just a couple of years ago, are showing this song praise and recognition, as well they should. This is a song that when I was a young kid and we would hear this playing on the radio, like at my little elementary school, right? That somebody would have one of those little small portable transistor radios and they'd play whatever location. And we'd be sitting in there on the basketball court. We'd have our short shorts on and the knee-high socks with the bands around, color bands around the top.
The visual. Stop.
And we'd be playing basketball to play that funky music. And it was such a fun song. Such a fun song. To this day, I get images of like roller rinks and disco balls and everything else that's just totally awesome.
I get the same imagery and I respect the legacy of it and your opinion, but I boycott anything from the 70s with funky in the title. I can't do it. I'm
but
sorry.
It's funky and boogie. I mean, how do you boycott either one of those terms?
Boogie's
They're
fine.
Awesome.
Funky. I draw the line at funky. Sorry.
All right, John, I don't know how you're going to top that honorable mention, but let's go ahead and hear yours just so we can get done with this part before we get into number one.
I don't think it's going to top it for anybody except me, but my honorable mention is Junk Food Junkie by Larry Gross from 1976.
Yeah, in the daytime I'm Mr. Natural, just as healthy as I can be. But at night I'm a junk food junkie. Good Lord, have pity on me.
Why are you all laughing at the junk food junkie? What? Come on now. Listen, Some respect is in order. 15 weeks on the U.S. charts, peaked at number 9, and nobody gives a damn about Larry Gross's one-hit wonder, The Junk Food Junkie.
No. Sorry.
No, not really.
If I'm going to listen to food-based music, I'm going to listen to Weird Al. Who the hell is Larry Gross?
Well, he didn't have much of a storied career, as you might imagine, when he made this list. This came out like right at the origin of like the health food craze in the mid-70s. So pretty much like all the people who were vegans today were in this trend, right? They're like, I'm super healthy and that kind of thing.
I'm going to eat bean sprouts and alfalfa sprouts and bananas.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. This is about a guy who is a self-proclaimed kind of health food fanatic, but at night he sneaks off and he eats junk food. You know, he eats Big Macs and Pringles and Twinkies. And
it sounds like a sitcom plot.
It could be. And I had this song on my Ronco 33 and a third LP Funky Favorites novelty record.
No wonder.
Loved this song. Novelty album.
Yep. So that's why it's my honorable mention, The Junk Food Junkie.
Oh my
yep.
God.
Okay. Oh. We've made it through the honorable mentions. We made it through 9 of the top 10. We made it to number 1. And George, we have reserved number 1 for you. Tell us what it is.
I don't know why we're reserving number 1 for the guy who didn't listen to hardly any music during the 1970s, but since we did, at least we picked a really good one, one that I know from Marvel. Once again, Brandy, You're a Fine Girl by Looking Glass from 1972. The sailors say, Brandy, you're a fine girl. You're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be. Such a fine girl. Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea. It'll probably surprise no one that this reached number 1 on both the Billboard Hot 100 and the Cashbox Top 100 charts, one of the only other songs on this list to do it on two different chart lists. Following the song's release in 1972, Brandy increased in popularity as a girl's name in the United States, according to the Social Security Administration.
Oh, yeah. That can make sense.
Oh, jeez.
In 1971, Brandy was number 353. For girls' names.
Right.
1972, it went all the way down to 140. And in 1973, the first full year after the song's popularity, went down to number 82.
The 82nd most popular woman's name.
Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy. According to the, you know, Social Security Administration, every time you got your little card and everything,
right,
I don't know how many illegitimate children named Brandy didn't get their Social Security cards or maybe stripper names were used as Brandy or something. So that number may be on the low side, but it definitely had an influence.
This did for Brandy what the police did for Roxy.
Yeah.
Popularized that name that maybe otherwise wasn't. And this is another great story-based relationship building and telling why you can't be with her. What a great, I love the story of this song.
Well, I think it may be the best story-based song, and that's what it was written for. It's such a good story that it's often misjudged as being inspired by a woman who really did live in the 1800s and pined for her sailor lover to come back home, but he never did, and she died waiting for him. But it's not about that woman at all. It's actually about the author's girlfriend who was named Randy at the time, and she just happened to be a barmaid. And then he went from there.
And he went off to the ocean? Did he go to get on a ship? No.
No, he just wrote the song about her being a barmaid, and because he wanted to write, quote unquote, a pirate song.
Oh, okay.
And
oh.
So this is
there you go.
How that developed.
He's supposed to be a pirate. I didn't pick that part up.
Yeah, I didn't either, but it's been in a lot of films, as we all know. Lords of Dogtown, Say Anything, Charlie's Angels, believe it or not. A Very Brady sequel, even. Like, okay. And then, of course, its most famous entry into film to date.
Lately.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Oh, yeah.
And it played not just in the movie, but it was central to the story of the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of people take from it.
I really enjoy just, like, the personification of the ocean in this, where, you know, I can't be with you because my life, my love, and my lady is the sea, right? So it's like for sailors, many of them, it brings so much color into it. It's not just like, I'm on a boat, so I can't love you. It's so deep. I love how it flows.
Well, and it's, you know, it goes to her as well. Like, she serves 100 ships a day, but she only loves one man.
Yes,
on all
exactly.
those ships.
Oh, I got chills. I love this song. What a great pick for number one. I'm so proud of us. I'm so proud of us.
Yeah, we actually wound up with one that we all sort of agree on. You know, that's pretty amazing.
Weird. Someone call Ripley.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, Mo, you gave this the highest point value of the three of us. I was second, and John was actually kind of on the low to moderate end for point values.
You know, I had more points on it. I shifted them down to Junk Food Junkie. That's all. That's what it was.
Oh, God. What the hell?
Oh, my God.
You guys just wouldn't vote for it. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
AM
FM Gold. All of your favorite hits of the 60s and 70s in one fantastic collection. Get AM Gold for just $9.99 on compact disc or double-length cassette. That's 22 fabulous hits. Then audition other great AM Gold albums. There's no minimum to buy. Cancel anytime.
I think I love you, so what am I so...
Call now.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. I can't get over how we all agreed and we're proud of our number one pick. That makes me so happy. So happy.
It's so rare.
It's the rarest of all things. It's like a precious little four-leaf clover. It's snowflake. Yes, it is. Before we get out of this show, you know, I'd like to take just a second toward the end to express our gratitude for our patrons who support us over on patreon.com. Give us a few bucks a month to really support what we do here on the podcast, over on the website, and on YouTube. Man, this is a growing list, 30 plus and counting. Here we go. I thank each and every one of you. Stubaka, Jason, Agile, Greg L, Shelby, Chet, Marcus, Levi, Tony, David, Adam, Slowmo, Thomas, Stewmonkey, Mark, Greg Z, Davis, Tom J, T2, Mike C, Lee, Dana, Ben, Jonathan H, Dan, Arlo, Steen, Blastetter, Stashit, Matt, Chad, and Travis. And Stewmonkey increased his pledge from what he had all the way up to $5 with
prompting from us.
Thank you so much for that. He said he was watching some of the bonus content and said, you know what? You guys are worth $2 more. And he did it. So
all right.
Thanks to you.
Nice.
We're worth $2. Awesome.
At least. Maybe at most.
I was going to say, different value scale there.
If you have not yet signed up for Patreon and would like to support us, Mo, would you tell the fine fourth listeners how they can go about getting all set up?
Oh, absolutely. Just go to GenXGrownUp.com/Patreon. There, it'll take you right to the site. We have all different levels. We appreciate anything anyone can give, of course. You know, anything anyone can give. But the more you give, we have additional bonus content. We have outtakes.
The more you get.
That's right. The more you give, the more you get. Even at the higher levels, we have swag. We even added a new highest level.
By popular demand. We had to.
Yeah. It's really awesome. And it really shows us that what we're doing is reaching you. So we really appreciate really anything that anybody can give.
Super gratifying. Thanks so much. And thank you, Mo. That is going to wrap it up for this look back at One Hit Wonders of the 1970s. We'll have another backtrack in 2 weeks, and a regular edition of our show is coming up next week. Until then, I am John. Mo, thank you so much for being here.
Always fun, man.
George, you know I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
And fourth listeners, it's you we appreciate most of all, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
No more washing shirts till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
I love the nightlife. I love to boogie. Now that's going to be stuck in my damn head.
The nights, the light, the night, the lights went. Yeah, I'm going to do it again.
The nights, the light. Yeah, one light of Georgia time.
This is the night the lights went out in Georgia. Georgia?
All right.
Apparently.
John, you have to make me feel better.
This podcast is going so damn well. I keep telling y'all. The internet guys do not want us to do this one.
The internet. It'll be speaking. Okay. All right. 5, 4, 3. Now, I had heard good job. First words. Fucked it up. 3, 2.
You got to get it out of the way early.
Right? Yeah. Greg Z, David, Tom J, T. It must be T2. I didn't type it. Okay, sorry.
All right. See?
3-2 I didn't type the 2. Tom J. T. Fucking put the 2 in there, idiot. I can't read it. 2. Got it. All right. Blah, blah, blah. Starting again at the beginning. Fourth listeners, how they can go about getting set up.
Sure. It's like super easy. Sorry.
Unlike my speaking.
Yeah, it's okay.
No, all right. Yes. Okay, unlike that's a blooper. Let me do it again. And they'll just hear this part at the end where I'm an idiot. Okay.
All right.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.